Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for this next hour, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Susan Franson. Thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening in. I hope you're enjoying these warm and sunny days in March. It seems like a lamb. It will be balmy through Saturday with temperatures climbing into the 50s. However, next week, March may go back to being a bit of a lion, and we may be seeing some more snow.
It's Friday. We usually start out with the past week's news by Dennis Hart, but today we have a slight change of plan. Susan Guiazda, Ames Public Relations Officer, is here at the top of the hour for her monthly check-in and municipal report for KHOI.
We'll hear Dennis' news roundup after we speak with Susan, and then we'll be kicking off Women's History Month with the fascinating story of women in Ghana. Towards the end of the show, we'll check out the All Iowa Arts Showcase. Stay with us.
Welcome back, Susan.
Once again, so much is happening in the city of Ames. One of the big announcements recently that affects our community is the announcement that Ames will be a RAGBRAI stop this summer.
That's right.
In July. And I know that seems like a long ways away, but the planning has begun. And I don't know if you remember 10 years ago in 2008 when RAGBRAI came through Ames and there was a stop. It was a big event for our community, and we centered that 2008 event around Iowa State University, and we had campers that were kind of along the Towers area.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do things a little bit differently. So everything is still in the preliminary stages, but the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau is taking the lead on this, and we are looking at allowing some camping in public parks, particularly along Stuart Smith Park, which is right alongside Hilton Coliseum. It's the linear park that sort of follows the river and then leads its way into Brookside Park. And we're looking at those areas to allow RAGBRAI bikers to camp at and having entertainment options right down here, Main Street area, looking at other parts of the community that would be of interest and just really kind of trying to look at those big picture options right now. So everything is in the planning stages, but we are getting people interested in volunteering and getting involved. So I just wanted to direct those people to the Convention and Visitors website. It is www.thinkames.com, and there's a button right on the front page of that website where people can get information about if they'd like to volunteer. Mm-hmm. This is a community event, and it will take a lot of volunteers.
So the main thing is looking for volunteers.
Yeah, we're looking mm-hmm. for volunteers, but we know at this point people are interested perhaps in doing vending, maybe getting involved in event planning. Anybody that has questions about what role they might play in RAGBRAI, this is the time to ask those mm-hmm. questions. I know it seems early, but July will come quickly, and we need to be mm-hmm. prepared, and a lot of that work needs to be done in advance.
And what does volunteering entail?
Oh, volunteering can be anything. You could be a work at an information kiosk. You could be a greeter when riders come in. Some people want to volunteer their yard for camping.
For camping. Wow.
Yeah. So there's mm-hmm. lots of different things that you can do. And depending on your ability, your agility, we would look at what you want to do and mm-hmm. sort of place you somewhere. There's committees that are working in advance. We have hospitality committees, marketing committees, public safety committees. So all of that work. So you can volunteer the day of. You can volunteer to be on planning. You can volunteer your home, your property, whatever it is that you want to do. And maybe it is you're a vendor and you want to do some selling. There's some work that you need to do in advance. So people are excited uh-huh. and we're looking at what are the options, what are the entertainment options, music options, food options, all that stuff will come into play. And we've learned from 2008 things that worked and things that didn't work. So we kind of have some direction. This year's route is exciting in that Ames is a stop, but 2 days later, Iowa City is a stop. So they're kind of playing it off of that Hawkeye Cyclone kind of rivalry. And we think that'll be a lot of fun and super exciting for us. And as a community, really a great opportunity to showcase Ames in the summer. You know, all the great things that are happening here. So we're excited by that. Just some other things that are just sort of more typical March kinds of things. I just want to remind everybody that hydrant flushing begins in March. That's when we flush out the hydrants, kind of clean out the water mains. This is done every spring. There's some protocol in there because we check each hydrant to make sure it's functioning correctly. This process dislodges minerals and deposits and sediments from the water mains. It verifies that the fire hydrants are all working. It identifies any weaknesses. We can do some maintenance right away. And it checks the flow. is working properly throughout the city. But what's kind of fun about our hydrant flushing we've done the last couple of years is that you can go online. We'll have an interactive map on our website, and you can see all the red dots on the map, and that indicates every hydrant. And then as we flush it in real time, it'll turn green. So we do it
like the figure skaters in the Olympics.
Yes. So we do it by quadrant or area. We try to put up signboards that say hydrant flushing will occur in your area, because when we do the hydrant flushing, it is possible that you'll get some sediment in your water and people will come home and they'll turn on the tap and they'll see a slight discoloration. Again, not dangerous. That's the naturally occurring mineral deposits. I'd like to call it value-added water. But you can just simply run your cold taps. Run the cold tap. Don't pull those minerals into your water heater. Mm-hmm. Run your cold taps. It can take a minute or two to clear out that discoloration, and you're fine. I do remember that I've had people very upset. They've used the discolored water for cooking. It's not dangerous. You shouldn't worry about it, but some people just don't care for it. Mm-hmm. So it's an easy way. Flush your taps, and it'll be fine. Look for those signboards, and then check the interactive map. If you have a hydrant on your block, watch it. Watch for it to turn. Slowly starts turning green as that happens. Mm-hmm. That process takes about 5 days to get through all the hydrants. There are mm-hmm. thousands of them. Our public works department works really hard to get those done. This process, when I first came here, used to take weeks. They have really gotten it down. So that's exciting, because to me, hydrant flushing always means spring is very close. One of the questions that we've been getting recently is March has typically been the month for our annual Eco Fair, and we have moved it into April. Now people think they've missed it. You have not missed the Eco Fair. It is coming up. It is April 21st this year, which is a Saturday. We're trying to connect it a little bit stronger with Earth Day. The Eco Fair will be 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Community Center Gym, which is right at City Hall, 515 Clark. And we've got lots of fun things planned for this year, just as we've done in the past. You probably have noticed we have reconstructed our parking lot to the west. Mm-hmm. And something kind of unique about that parking lot is that where the cars actually sit is brick pavers. It adds this pervious surface where water can seep through. So a parking lot, if you think about it, is always a hard surface, and it funnels a lot of water and runoff. All that rainwater that comes down on a parking lot hits the cars, hits the grit and grease, and then runs it into our waterways. This parking lot will help filter that water through different layers, so the water will be clean. There's bioretention cells to help clean that water.
That's great.
Yeah, so by the time that it actually goes back into the waterway, it's been filtered a little bit. Hmm. We're using this as sort of a showcase for other people mm-hmm. to look at how they might do parking lots. Mm-hmm. Parking lots are notoriously not very attractive, and we feel like our parking lot not only is aesthetically pleasing, but has this extra filtration in place. So we'll be showcasing that at the Eco Fair. We have a local community volunteer that has arranged now for several years to do an electric car display. Mm-hmm. So all the various electric cars throughout the area, they usually have anywhere from 5 to 10 electric cars on display. The city has a couple of electric cars we're going to be adding to that exhibit as well. And then we're going to do something fun this year. We're going to do a school supply drop-off. So it's April, and maybe you bought some new school supplies for your kids, maybe January, February, but, you know, the year's almost over and you've got extras. So we want those gently used but still good school supplies. We're going to have a table set up where you can drop those school supplies off, or you can take them if you need them. Mm-hmm. So, and then any extras will go to the Volunteer Center of Story County. I want to mention, as we get into sort of volatile spring weather, that to be prepared if your electricity would ever go off. I want everybody to write this number down. If your power is out, make sure to call the power outage number at 239-5240, 239-5240. That is a reporting mechanism that gives us your address and lets the electric department know that you are experiencing a power outage. Even if your neighbor has called, even if your friend has called, associate your address with that outage, and that helps us identify an issue.
And we'll put that number on the website. That's 539-5240.
Absolutely.
For power outage.
Yep. Lots of things happening. Okay. Always, we encourage people to check our website, and it's great to see you.
So we are speaking with Susan Guiazza, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Susan comes once a month to keep us updated on municipal issues and what's happening in Ames. Thank you so much, Susan, and see you next month.
All righty.
Okay. Here's Dennis Hart with a roundup of this week's past news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and local related newspapers.
We begin with news from Tuesday's AIM Tribune, which reported that in the wake of another mass shooting, the one that left 17 students and staff dead at a Florida high school, Democratic congressional candidate J.D. Scholten said that he supports universal background checks for gun buyers, closing the so-called gun show loophole, and allowing the federal government to fully study gun violence as a public health issue. Scholten is a Sioux City paralegal and former professional ball player. He is running for his party's 4th congressional district nomination, competing against AIM's pediatrician John Passion and Spencer City Council member Leanne Jacobson in the Democratic primary. The winner will likely take on 8-term incumbent Republican Steve King in the general election. On Monday, Scholten hosted an open house at his campaign office in Ames and spoke to a crowd of about 15 people. He said he respected the Second Amendment to the Constitution, but in his words, when it comes to taking away lives at such an effortless cost, it's happening too frequently. He said he does not see the current Congress taking up any weapons ban legislation. Congressman King has received A ratings from the National Rifle Association. 2 years ago, he tweeted, in his words, "I've had it with the gun-grabbing Democrats and their sit-in, anti-Second Amendment jihad. I'm going to go home and buy a new gun." Also in Tuesday's Trib, word that the Ames man, who was found guilty in the 2013 shooting death of another man, wants the chance to argue for a new trial in person. This after a hearing on Monday in which he argued via telephone. 36-year-old Lee Laws LePon was convicted of second-degree murder in 2015 and sentenced to 50 years in prison for the death of Devlin Lockman. LePon must serve a minimum of 35 years before he will be eligible for parole. He filed a motion for a new trial earlier this month after the Iowa Court of Appeals upheld his conviction. LePon told investigators that Lockman was handling the gun while drunk, and that when he, LePon, tried to take the gun away, Lockman pulled his left arm away, causing the gun to fire. During Monday's hearing, LePon argued that he should be granted a new trial because of new evidence, but he would not tell the judge what that evidence was. He said he wants to present that evidence in person at a hearing. The judge said he would make a ruling within the next few weeks. Also Tuesday in the Trib, a Boone man who pleaded guilty to breaking into a Northwest Ames home with his brother and assaulting and robbing the 55-year-old man who lived there was sentenced to 50 years in prison on Monday. 23-year-old Edward Lester had pleaded guilty to first-degree burglary and second-degree robbery. He was arrested last August. His 19-year-old brother Ian was also arrested. He has pleaded guilty to the same charges and will be sentenced April 9th. Edward Lester will serve a minimum of 10 years in prison and pay a $1,000 fine. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, a front-page story about a group of South Sudanese refugees planning to open an international food center on South Duff Avenue in a few weeks. Safari Cuisine will encompass a restaurant, cafe, bar, and a small ethnic foods market at 217 South Duff. The restaurant will serve African foods such as lamb and okra over rice, along with Middle Eastern fare such as kebab. The kitchen will have a different side dish from a new country every Friday. Restaurants of this kind are not common in Ames, with Pamel Grocery being the only other establishment serving Middle Eastern food in the city. But the new restaurant's owners believe their food will draw customers back for more once they try it. The location has changed hands twice in the past year. La Fuente, a Mexican restaurant, operated there for 2 decades before closing in 2016. Chow's, an Italian restaurant, opened in the building last year, but closed after several months. Also front page in Tuesday's Ames Trib, a feature story about Sawyer Elementary School art teacher Lori Oak, who is retiring after 18 years with the Ames School District. Oak's classroom has not been a traditional art setting. Her goal has never been to teach her students how to perfectly execute a drawing or a sculpture. Instead, she said, her goal is to teach students to think. She said, in her words, Ames has traditionally had the top art program in the state, with the most award-winning all-state artists, and I wanted to be part of that team that continues that goal of keeping our kids at the top of art education in Iowa. Wednesday's Trib reported that the Ames City Council reviewed some potential safety improvements to Lincoln Way south of the Iowa State campus on Tuesday night. Representatives from a consulting group offered changes to two busy intersections for both cars and pedestrians, Welch Avenue and Stanton. Those possible changes involve traffic signal timing, removing parts of the median, and adding a painted crosswalk. The improvements could cost between $120,000 and $150,000. The council instructed city staff to look into all of it. An Ames traffic engineer said that around 300 people an hour cross at the Welch Avenue and Stanton Avenue intersections. Safety on Lincoln Way has been an issue for years. An Iowa State student died in 2015 after she was hit by a Cyride bus at the Ash Avenue-Lincoln Way intersection. One of the consultants at the meeting told the council that normally on a street like Lincoln, he'd expect pedestrians to comply with traffic signals 75% of the time. The actual rate in the area is 35%. The consultants proposed removing the narrow median at the Welch Avenue intersection and moving the left turn lane up against the dividing yellow lines. The space left from the median's removal would separate the left turn lane from the lanes that will continue going straight. The removal of the median would take away a safe place for pedestrians to pause while they're crossing Lincoln Way against the light. At the Stanton Avenue intersection, the consultant suggested adding a painted crosswalk. An alternative would be to discourage people from crossing there by extending the median across the intersection and building a fence along the center of the median. Also in Wednesday's Trib, a story about Tuesday's Story County Board of Supervisors meeting, where Board Chair Rick Sanders said the county could lose about $222,000 in backfill money from the state next year if a bill percolating in the state legislature becomes law. Sanders called it, in his words, the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard of, and said he hopes the bill dies a quick death in the state Senate. The Iowa State Association of Counties opposes the measure, saying counties would be forced to raise property taxes or cut services to cope with the loss of backfill money. That money is designed to compensate municipalities who lost property tax dollars as a result of the tax reform bill passed by the legislature 5 years ago. Also Wednesday in the Trib, word that the second finalist being considered in the hunt for Iowa State University's next vice president of Extension and Outreach was announced on Tuesday. He is John Lawrence, currently the interim VP of Extension and Outreach, and the associate dean in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. The first finalist, Brent Hales, the senior associate dean and chief financial officer at the University of Minnesota Extension, was announced last week. Four finalists are expected to be chosen for the search. Wednesday's Tribune also reported that a new pop-up exhibit addressing mass shootings across the nation has opened in the basement gallery of the Christian Peterson Art Museum on the ISU campus. The exhibit is called Thoughts and Prayers, Mass Shootings in the U.S. It's the first exhibit of its kind in the gallery. The idea for the exhibit, themed around the shooting, started after the Las Vegas shootings last October, and the recent Florida high school shootings cemented the idea. There was more in Wednesday's Trib, including word that local car dealership Ames Cars has finished its move to the corner of South Duff Avenue and Lincoln Way. The dealership bought the lot last fall. The renovated lot has new signs, and the building now has a waiting area and more offices. The corner was previously home to Butch's Automotive, which ran for nearly two decades before being sold in 2016. Wednesday's Trib also reported that Colo area native Ted Rasmussen has announced his candidacy for Story County Treasurer. It's the first time that Democrat Rasmussen has run for public office. He is challenging incumbent Treasurer Renee Tweet, who first won office in 2010. Rasmussen said he will not make the race a partisan event. The Treasurer's office monitors the county's various funds, collects property taxes, and processes motor vehicle titling and registration. Rasmussen said he will make the most out of a county budget that he says is going to shrink in the coming years. The primary election for local and county-level candidates is June 5th. The general election, November 6th. Also in Wednesday's Trib, word that the Ballard School Board spent most of its time in its recent February meeting discussing various options for the potential renovation of the existing middle school. Multiple options are being talked about, including adding a middle school onto the high school, building a new middle school, or renovating the existing middle school. Details and construction options for the project are being spearheaded by Hala Architects of Ames. Cost estimates for renovating the existing middle school range from $13 million to $16 million, plus additional mechanical and electrical updates of between $3 million and nearly $5 million. The Ballard School Board will continue meeting with Hala Architects to come up with what it considers the best possible option. The board hopes to bring whatever proposal it decides on to voters later this year. In order to pass, the bond referendum would have to receive 60% approval. There was more in Wednesday's Trib, including a feature story about the man who will become the next superintendent of the Collins-Maxwell School District. And when he takes that office, 38-year-old Jordan Nelson will also keep his positions of middle school and high school principal. You can read about Nelson and the trials and tribulations he faced during his first year as principal at Collins-Maxwell High School in Wednesday's Tribune. Thursday's Tribune reported on the April 3rd bond referendum in which residents of the Ames School District will be asked to decide whether $110 million in general obligation bonds should be issued to build a new high school and to fund additions to Edwards, Mitchell, and Meeker Elementary Schools. Those elementary schools were recently renovated or rebuilt through a $55 million project that started in 2011. Elementary school enrollment has increased every year since then. Meeker now has 72 more students, and Edwards has 118 more. Those numbers are not expected to drop. District officials say many classrooms at the three elementary schools are already at capacity. If the bond referendum passes, the expansion project would add six new classrooms to each school. Of the $110 million in funds up for a vote, the elementary project is expected to require about $5 million. Thursday's Trib also reported that a 4% tuition hike could be on the way for Iowa State resident undergraduate students. A first reading of the 2018-2019 tuition rates for the state's public universities has been postponed at the Board of Regents until next month. The reason? There's not enough information available yet as to how much funding cuts will be needed to keep Iowa's budget out of the red at the end of this fiscal year. Last summer, interim ISU President Ben Ellen said it would take annual tuition hikes of 7% for resident undergrads to maintain Iowa State's quality of education and to catch up with 10 years of enrollment growth. Also in Thursday's Trib, word that several buildings on Main Street's 100 block will get a facelift later this year after the Ames City Council approved about $60,000 in matching funds for the project. The money will go to buildings at 110 Main, 116 Main, and 131 Main Street. Those buildings will have new exteriors and, in some cases, new windows. The grants are designed to go to downtown business owners who show interest in putting money into their properties. In a separate action, the City Council also approved the 2018-2019 Community Development Block Grant Action Plan. Each year, the city receives an allocation of CDBG funds from the federal government to be used to foster affordable housing development. For the 2018-2019 fiscal year, the city plans to have nearly $1.4 million in the program. Meanwhile, Story County supervisors unanimously passed the final two readings of an ordinance that will allow the permanent construction of cabins on commercial campgrounds and travel trailer parks. The cabins would be available for guests year-round, but those guests would not be allowed to stay more than 30 consecutive days in a cabin. The supervisors also voted to request bids for Phase 2 of the Environmental Learning Corridor at the Iowa State Research Park. Once all three phases are finished, the project will include trails, conservation areas, and gathering places. Also Thursday in the Tribune, a story about the Huxley family planning to file an injunction against the city because it upheld its ordinance banning residents from owning pit bull terriers. The Swanson family's family dog is an American Staffordshire Terrier, a breed commonly associated with being a pit bull. It's a complicated story, the bottom line being that the family has not yet filed its injunction, so the dog, named Stella, will stay with friends who live in Nevada until the issue is resolved. The family says it's willing to move if Stella cannot stay with them, and you can read all about it in Thursday's Trib. Also in the Trib, word that Story County Democrats will host their annual Soup Supper on Saturday. The theme of this year's supper is Winning in a Red State, and several speakers will make presentations. You can get more information in Thursday's Ames Tribune. In this week's Nevada Journal, the Nevada woman who set fire to her mobile home last September and who then fled while leaving animals inside has pleaded guilty to second-degree arson. 33-year-old Erica Renee Tinnemeyer faces up to 10 years in prison when she is sentenced April 9th. Authorities said Tinnemeyer set fire to her mobile home at 515 West N Avenue in the Oak Ridge Mobile Home Park. Firefighters and neighbors rescued her animals from cages that were there inside. Also in the Journal, word that the city of Nevada is getting ready to be one of the pass-through communities for the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride across Iowa in July. The riders will come through Nevada on Wednesday morning, July 25th, after spending the night before in Ames. At the Nevada City Council meeting, Public Works Director Mike Neal said recent ice storms have used up much of the ice treatment product for the city and its road crews. More has been ordered. And Fire Chief Ray Reynolds told the council that in the aftermath of the recent school shooting in Florida, there's been a rush to consider all types of things to keep children safe. Reynolds said some of the suggestions, such as locking kids in schools and classrooms, worry fire professionals because they could impede fire safety measures. Also in the Journal, a story about the pharmacist at Story Medical Center in Nevada, who left last week on a one-year mission with the National Guard in Kosovo. 52-year-old Paul Grodolucian has been with the pharmacy for 20 years. He has served in the National Guard for 32 years, and up until now, he had never been deployed out of the country. He said when he returns to Iowa, he will be glad to get back to Story Medical Center, a place that, he said, has people who are like family to him. In this week's Boone News Republican, a Boone woman has been sentenced to 20 years in prison on drug charges. That sentence will run consecutively to a Polk County case involving the woman, meaning she faces 30 years in prison. 36-year-old Alicia Jo Fucolaro had pleaded guilty to conspiracy to deliver methamphetamine and possession of a controlled substance. The News Republican also reported that Boone County Hospital's Board of Trustees is looking at the possibility of the adult daycare program being taken over by the Eastern Star Masonic Home in Boone. And one more note, the News Republican also reports that Chris Ann Hickel of Boone is seeking the Democratic nomination for Boone County Treasurer in the June 5th primary. She currently works in the county engineer's office. In this week's Story City Herald, word that the city has developed a capital improvement plan for its wastewater treatment plant. That plant went into operation in 1989 and needs major improvements over the next 5 to 7 years, improvements that could cost more than $2 million. Building a new wastewater treatment plant will cost much more, about $10 million. City Administrator Mark Jackson said starting next year, the city needs to phase in an increase in the monthly sewer rate by a total of about $9 to pay for the first phase of the needed improvements. Currently, Story City's monthly sewer rate is $60.48. By comparison, the rate in Ames is $57.92, while Nevada's is $82.47. And that is your weekly summary of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers. I'm KHOY Civic Reporter Dennis Hart, wishing you, as always, a happy, safe, and healthy week.
And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI with warm weather music. It's High Life, music from Ghana that combines modern Western instruments with traditional melodies and rhythms. As you know, countries on the African continent have been characterized in a negative way by the federal government in recent weeks. However, we don't have to take the president's word for it, since we are fortunate to have people from many of these countries living in our area, and they can tell us firsthand about their homelands.
To begin Local Talk's interviews during International Women's Month, we have been turning to the women. We are starting with Ghana, because women played an important role in the founding of that country. Dr. Jane Adjiman, Director of Upward Bound at Iowa State, comes from Ghana. Thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We need to know a little bit about Ghana.
Yes.
And how you got to be the way you are. I was particularly eager to begin with Ghana because I knew that the market women had been very instrumental in the struggle for independence. So let's just start with the struggle for independence.
Yes. And at the time of independence, which happened on March 6, 1957, Ghana happened to be the first country south of the Sahara to have attained independence on that day. I was only 5 years old. As I grew up, I knew that the market women were very, very instrumental in the political climate of the country, in the sense that if a politician was coming into town, it was the market women with their cloths and everything and finding the streets and dancing and paving the way for whoever the politician was. They set the tone for whatever the political climate was going to be. Very, very instrumental. If they didn't like you and your policies, you were not going anywhere. If they liked you, they will sing your praises, and their children will listen to them, and the whole country followed with them.
Your father was also instrumental in independence. Is that right?
My father was in the very first government following independence. I don't know what his role was prior to independence, but I know that the first cabinet that was implemented after independence, my father was in that. And that's what shaped all the policies and stuff like that. And one of the policies that I always go back to, because my father and I talked about it a lot, was the decision that was made back then to have English be the national language. And the reason they wanted that was because we all have our tribal languages and our local dialects and everything, but they decided that let's settle with English because that is the one language we all hate in common, okay? So we all hate that. We all accept that. So let's not fight between us as to which one of our languages is the most important. If we did that, we'll be separating. This is a time for us to come together to fight the enemy, which is at that time the British, of course, who were just getting our independence from them. So they decided back then that we would accept English. It saved us a lot of grief. We've never had any tribal unrest in trying to say, this tribe is more important than this tribe, or this language is better than this one. So as a nation, we've enjoyed a lot of peace as far as that is concerned. I won't be too far from wrong to say that we probably remain the only country south of the Sahara which has not had any civil war.
And what about religious differences?
It's predominantly Christian. We have some Muslims predominantly in the northern part of the country. We also still have some indigenous in the southern part, and even in the north, we also do still have some indigenous religions in there. And then, of course, we have atheists also.
Do you have, what kind of education do you have?
Since independence, elementary education has always been free and mandatory. That was the first elected government that came into being. That was their policy, and we held that until the first military takeover in 1966. So once you finish your elementary education, which will all be free, then you went into secondary school, and then you took your common entrance exam, and then you go into secondary school. And then secondary school is where you have to be able to afford to go further. And so a lot of people will drop off from the education system. But back in the day, it was just like when you finish high school over here, there are several people who never went on to college, but they still got gainful employment. Back in the day in Ghana, when you finished your elementary, you could get a good employment. Not anymore, because right now, even college graduates, just like here, are having a hard time finding employment. But there's no discrimination. In fact, as far back as 1961, Ghana had a female Supreme Court Chief Justice. That was way before anybody in the Western Hemisphere had a female either head of state or something like that.
Oh, well, isn't there a tradition in Ghana that makes women particularly?
Yes. In a lot of tribes, a lot of sectors, especially in the Akan culture. Akan is the predominant culture in Ghana. Within the Akan culture, there are so many different aspects of it. Okay, so it's like almost like a British English versus American English. There's some similarity, but that's true for Akan. In the Akan culture, inheritance, heritage and everything is traced through the mother. It's matrilineal. That places a very significant role on part of the woman. So when there's a vacant seat to crown a chief or a king, for example, in the Ashanti culture, which is part of under the umbrella of the Akan culture, if the Ashanti king dies and they need to instate a new king, it is the queen mother that handpicks. It is traced, the next to inherit the throne has to come from the queen mother's line. That is very, very significant. If it's not through the queen mother's line, that person will never see the throne. So that culture alone, that's all we know. We inherit through the matrilineal lines. And so that has afforded women a lot of power. And so when you go to the marketplace, it's almost completely women. And women have traditionally been the ones that have supported their families. It's only quite recently that men have taken over that role.
Dr. Jane Hodgeman, why did you leave Ghana to come to America?
I left Ghana in 1983 because my husband had left in 1981 to come and pursue his PhD. And I left in 83 when I finally got a visa to come and join him, number one, and also to help me complete my college education. So after I got a visa, after 2-year wait, I arrived in Ames, Iowa in December of 1983 with snow on the ground and a temperature of minus 22. Coming from a country where temperatures never go below 60, that was a rude awakening, but we survived it, and now Iowa is my favorite weather.
Really?
Believe it or not, it is. I love it.
But you moved into Pamel Court right away, is that correct?
Yes, we moved into Pamel Court, and Pamel Court will forever be my favorite place to have lived because we used to call it Little United Nations. And we called it that because you wouldn't know that the kids that were growing up in Pamel Court were from so many different countries. All they knew was that my neighbor is called Ali, and I don't know where he's from. He's my friend, and that's all that mattered. And so they rode their bikes in the streets of Pamel Court. Very seldom would you find cars coming there and threatening anybody's safety. They felt safe. Parents could feel safe, and the cheapness of it. It was very decent housing at an affordable cost. The environment, everybody taking care of their neighbor and everybody getting along, made for a very, very peaceful community to live in.
So did you go to school as soon as you got here?
No, I did not. I got here in 83, and I had come originally to join my husband, so I wasn't eligible to start school yet. And so I had to apply to immigration to switch my visa from being what they call back then F2 to an F1 visa, which would then allow me to be here on my own, under my own circumstances as a student. And so that application process took about a year, and it wasn't until fall of 84, and actually August is when I got the visa granted. And so then I started fall of 84 back at Iowa State, transferred to Iowa State as a junior. From 84, finished my bachelor's in 86. So when a month after I started school, when I started to say, okay, I want out of here. I want out of this relationship. And it was due to a very severe domestic violence situation. I had to leave. Otherwise, I would not even be sitting here today to talk about it. So when I decided to leave, I was faced with this issue of how am I going to go forward? Now that I'm in school, I need to pay for my tuition. I have a kid in tow. First of all, I moved to the shelter, battered women's shelter, and ran into a friend of mine. I don't know if you know her, Judy Collin. And Judy heard about my situation, talked to a few girlfriends of hers around, and they paid for my first semester's tuition. All she had to tell them was, I have a woman in the shelter. She never told me who those women are. You could very well maybe have contributed to my education. But my first semester's fees was paid from the generosity of women in Ames, Iowa. Use this. Let me know if you haven't found a job, and I will go from there. We'll find you money for next semester. And I said, Judy, this is all I need. I'm going to take it up from here. So I found jobs, and at one point I was working 5 jobs every day, 5 distinctly different jobs to take care of myself and my son and save enough to pay for my tuition. Thank heavens for Pamel Court. My rent was $86 a month. So through the Ghanaian fortitude and ingenuity and resourcefulness, my son grew up never knowing that we were poor because his needs were always met.
Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Jane Hodgeman, director of Upward Bound at Iowa State, who immigrated from Ghana in 1983.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Susan Franson. And thank you, Susan, for recording that interview with Dr. Jane Hodgeman, director of Upward Bound at Iowa State University.
Pretend I'm sending to my sister. Nina Refim don't fool be a man, you know. Mumma mentrem was then a yard.
This is Local Talk. This Saturday will mark the first of a series of five concerts at Ames City Auditorium called the All Iowa Arts Showcase. And so in this last part of Local Talk today, Greta Anderson, KHOI reporter, will speak to the planner of this event about his vision for the program.
Craig Kaufman, the
Auditorium, Bandshell, and Community Center Manager.
He's a new guy in town, relatively speaking, just been here for a year. Craig, where'd you come from?
Most recently, Western New York, just south of Buffalo, about an hour and a half.
And the reason he's on the show this morning is that Craig has put together a series of concerts that begins this Saturday, March 3rd, with Patrick Fleming and Ryan Dowdy right here in the Ames City Auditorium where I'm conducting this interview. It's such a beautiful space.
Yeah, it's really a very underutilized facility in downtown Ames. It's been very well preserved, and it's definitely ready for more events like this.
Okay, so we have five concerts coming up in the months of March and April. Help us get over that hump into the summer where music is much more available. And it's called the All Iowa Arts Showcase. Talk about the name and the artist that you chose to foreground.
Sure. Well, the whole idea sort of came about talking with a few musician friends here that were interested in doing a showcase of their own. And really didn't have a great facility for it. So they came to me and we started talking, and the whole idea is that there's going to be Iowa-based concessions. Lockwood Cafe serves things that are all sourced locally here in Ames. All the artwork that we were going to display in the lobby would feature Iowa local artists. And the music for the evening would be one local Ames performer paired with somebody from somewhere else in the state. So we do have some people from Iowa City. We do have some other people from central Iowa. But every night has one Ames musician and then somebody from somewhere else in the state of Iowa who you may not get to see on a regular basis here in town.
So when you speak to someone from out of town and you're describing the space they're going to play in, what do you say?
Well, you know, what I made sure to do, you know, and the first and foremost, we didn't have a huge budget to do this, so I'm actually really grateful that I got all of these performers to come from out of town to do this, who agreed to do it for, you know, not a promise of a large sum of money, but said, hey, here's some pictures of the facility. I sent them some really nice photos that we have of other events and things. I said, well, here's what we're trying to do. We're a venue who's just kind of starting to stand up on our own legs and trying to do some of our own things. Could you help us out? And shockingly, most of the people that I spoke with were like, yeah, absolutely. I would love to do that.
And so what brought you to Ames anyway from Western New York?
Well, we've kind of lived all over. I grew up in Iowa, in Eastern Iowa. Both of my brothers went to Iowa State, so I did spend a lot of time up here when I was in college. I went to Simpson, so I was in central Iowa. I lived in Des Moines, and my wife and I kind of moved back and forth between New York and Iowa and Chicago. And we were living in New York City, found out we were having our first child, and decided that that wasn't where we wanted to be with our first child. And so we moved closer to her family out in Western New York. We always kind of knew that we would either end up out there if the right jobs kept us there, or probably back in Iowa if something popped up. And a friend of mine sent me the link to this job, and he said, hey, I think this sounds like this would be a really good fit for you. And I looked at it and read it, and I said, yeah, I think you're right. And I came and interviewed, and here I am.
Why is it a good fit for you?
Well, I've spent the last, since around 97, 98, when I was in college, doing production and events, working with musicians, producing shows, both backstage and on stage. Started all around then, and, you know, I spent my time in New York City and Chicago and the other places that we live working in production and in event production, both in the corporate and entertainment industry. My last job in New York City was managing the National Opera Center in New York City as a technical manager. And this position was interesting because they were looking for somebody who had a mix of technical skills, but also had worked on producing events, and had some, you know, some of the skills needed to be able to, you know, work on marketing and work on setting up some of these shows and booking some of these shows. And so it was a very strange kind of niche position, and I'm really glad that they chose me. So,
okay, so let's talk about Saturday's show. It starts at 7, and it features Patrick Fleming, otherwise known as Gloom Balloon, mm-hmm. and Ryan Dowdy.
So Patrick, a lot of people in Ames probably recognize his name or recognize the name Poison Control Center, which was a band that was very, very popular here for well over a decade. I remember even being in college and seeing the Poison Control Center or hearing about the Poison Control Center all the way down in Indianola.
One of our first Pantorium sessions, although at that time I think it was called Pandemonium at the Pantorium.
That would have been a good fit for that.
Yeah, it was the Poison Control Center.
Yeah, and like I said, I had heard the name, and I know that Patrick is also very involved with Maximum Ames and the Maximum Ames Music Festival. And I actually reached out to him and said, hey, do you know anybody on the Maximum Ames label that would be interested in participating in this? And he said, well, I haven't played there in a very, very long time. I would love to be involved. And I said, well, let's come talk to me and we'll see what we can work out. So that's sort of how that came about. And then Ryan Doty is actually, he's a friend of several of my musician friends. And I kind of, since I'm new here, had to rely on some folks that I knew, and they passed his name to me and I checked out some of his stuff. He's got a very sort of roots Americana, Midwestern kind of vibe, you know, folky, and it's very, pleasant to listen to, and I really, really enjoyed what I heard. So I contacted him, and he said, absolutely.
So there's a little bit of a contrast with the two performers.
Definitely. They're both fantastic songwriters, and that's really what this event's all about. You know, a lot of these people are, they might have some similarities, but they're also, you know, fairly different. You know, they're a little bit of contrast in each one of them, but it's really just kind of about the songwriting and about the art.
Excellent. And then there's going to be another show the following Saturday, and then a show the following Friday.
Yep.
Okay, so this is just wonderful. The idea that you don't have to go into a place that sells alcohol to see some really good music and still have a kind of an intimate experience in this place.
And that's, you know, that was 100% the idea that Ben and I kind of used to develop this, is that there are a lot of people in this town, whether it's graduate students or young adults living here, who have families who maybe don't always want to go downtown to a bar because they can't get a babysitter, or because maybe they just want to go to bed at 10 or 11 o'clock and their friend's band doesn't start till midnight. So we wanted to kind of cater a little bit to those folks who can't always make it out to a show downtown. And give it a nice, seated, intimate experience, where you don't have to worry about, oh, am I going to have a place to stand? Is it going to be loud? Is it going to be crowded? No, you'll have your seat if you want to bring your children. It's an all-ages show, and you can come and have some coffee and tea and enjoy some treats and check out some local artwork and sit and enjoy a really fantastic show.
We have not spoken about the local artwork. You are curating exhibits out mm-hmm. in the lobby of local artists.
Yes, exactly. And we've reached out, you know, through CASA and through Octagon. We're still kind of getting things arranged for that portion of it. You know, we're trying to do 1 to 3 artists for every evening to just have some work on display. The idea is that if they want to sell some work, they can come in and display and sell work and be present and talk to people about what they've done and, you know, what they're working on. Or if they just want to come and set up a display of their work, you know, we have several slots still available for artists.
Okay, and the tickets for these events, they are, you could say, reasonable, and you get a discount for getting them early.
And we did just release online ticketing a day or two ago. So you can call the community center, you can stop by the front desk of the community center, and usually community centers open 5 a.m. till 10 p.m., Monday through Friday, and then they have a pretty broad range of hours on the weekends, or you can go online. If you go to our Facebook page or go, I'm going to update the calendar links on the website today. If you go and just click on the event, there'll be a link to the online ticketing and you can just jump on there and purchase your tickets that way.
Okay, great. And the first show is this Saturday, Patrick Fleming and Ryan Dowdy at 7 p.m. Ames City Auditorium. It's going to be a lot of fun, isn't it?
We can't wait. Yeah, we're very excited.
Okay, Craig Hoffman, Ames City Manager of all kinds of facilities for music, including, we should mention, the Banshell Park. So that's something to look forward to. Maybe we'll do another interview with you in May.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the ideas here as well is that maybe if this event has some success, that maybe we can look at doing one larger arts festival out in the park in the summer. So.
Woohoo! Thank you very much, Craig.
Thanks a lot.
I'm looking for a drummer who will double as my driver, triple as my psychiatrist. Oh, we must prescribe the pills, all the uppers and the downers, the cotton clouds and the Mystic Valley mist. Far and wide, I'm searching far and wide. I will get you, I'll catch you, you mainly trap. I'm searching far and wide for you.
And that is the music of Ryan Dowdy, one of the two Iowa performers who will appear on Saturday at Ames City Auditorium as part of the All Iowa Showcase. Check out the series on the Ames City website and keep listening to KHOI as we'll be giving away tickets to those events. That's a first for us, isn't it?
Well, actually, Evan's been giving the tickets away already.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been one of your hosts, Susan Franzen, with Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. You can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and the information you've heard during the program. And KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. And remember that we'll post the phone number if you're having a power outage that Susan Guiazda gave at the beginning of the show, a place you can call if you're having problems with power. And our theme song is, as always, Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. On Sunday, March 4th, between 2 and 4 p.m., will be International Women's Day at the Ames Public Library. It's always a really enjoyable event, both for men and women to attend. Jeanette Colton will be the keynote speaker there. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we will definitely train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. It's a very interesting thing to do, right, Susan?
Mm-hmm. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
la 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 la